Please be seated.
The State of Washington Court of Appeals Division 1 is now in session. The Honorable J. Robert Leach presiding.
Our first case this morning is State v. Van Ness. Before counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Kevin March on behalf of Stephen Van Ness. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. This Court should reverse Mr. Van Ness's VUCSA convictions and remand for dismissal of this prosecution because the warrantless search of Mr. Van Ness's locked container was unconstitutional. Warrantless searches are presumed unconstitutional unless justified by one of the narrowly drawn exceptions to the warrant requirement. At issue here are the search incident to arrest exception and the inventory search exception. Neither applies to uphold the search in this case. Traditionally, the search incident to arrest exception was justified by two policy rationales. Those policy rationales are officer safety and evidence preservation. Those are the twin rationales of Chimmel. Byrd, our Supreme Court's 2013 case, made a distinction between Robinson-type searches incident to arrest, where the search of a person or personal effects was at play, and the search of the location in a suspect's reach, such as a vehicle. So
Wasn't there evidence, or tell me about the evidence, was there any evidence in the record that there was some justification based on officer safety? Apparently there have been trainings that had gone on related to a pipe bomb that had previously been found in a similar type of backpack. So what in the record is there related to officer safety, if anything?
There was no
concerning the locked container.
Concerning the locked container, there was no indication whatsoever that officer safety was implicated. Mr. Van Ness did have several knives in his possession that were outside and inside.
Didn't one of the officers testify at the suppression hearing about the same problems with containers in the past?
Yes, the officer indicated that Officer Edmonds indicated during his suppression testimony that other similar locked containers had contained dangerous items in the past. Our position, Your Honor, is that this is an individualized determination. What other contain?
Does Berg say that we don't have any individualized determination of either officer safety or preservation of evidence, and that both of those concerns are completely untethered from the search of the person?
No, Your Honor. Yes and no. Yes.
Tell me about the yes part first.
So, to say that this, yes, in personal effects, items that are immediately associated with the person or a fair sense projection of the person are subject to search under Byrd without the policy justifications. However, a locked container is very different. Our position is a locked container is not a fair sense projection of the person. A locked container is not closely associated with the person. A locked container is not immediately accessible by the person. That's because, as the Supreme Court recognized in Stroud, a person would have to take the time to access the locked container, search through the backpack, find the locked container, open the combination, and gain access to the contents.
Stroud was a while ago. And so now you could construct a bomb that you could detonate with a cell phone.
That's true. There was no indication of that here.
How would there be?
Well, the inventory search exception, which is really, I believe, what Your Honor's question is going toward, is still must be justified by manifest necessity. That means there must be some indication that there is a danger to the officers. That rule was recently reaffirmed in Tyler in 2013, the Hauser manifest necessity rule.
Well, what about the language in Robinson that says that the court is not going to engage in a particularized evaluation of either the issue of officer safety or preservation of evidence in the context of a search of the person incident to arrest?
I don't believe Robinson says that at all. In fact, Robinson specifically indicates that the twin Chimmel rationales are the only rationales that underlie a search incident to arrest. And again, under
Justice Stevens in Byrd says that is what Robinson says, and that's why she distinguishes Gantt from Robinson.
Well, and our position, Your Honor, is
we're bound by what our Supreme Court said. So what words would you say that we write down on a piece of paper to explain what is different about this case than what Justice Stevens said?
Justice Stevens did say that, but she also said extending Robinson to articles within the arrestee's reach, but not actually in his possession, exceeds the rule's rationale. Our position is that
a
locked...
She's talking there about a Gantt-type search, isn't she?
No, she's talking about the distinction between personal effects that are immediately accessible and things that are just within a person's reach. A locked box is not immediately accessible because a person has to unlock a locked box by entering the correct combination. Therefore, that's the distinction.
So you're telling me that a locked box is not immediately associated with the arrestee's person when the locked box is in the backpack?
That's correct. And in this case, it illustrates why that's so. Mr. Van Ness was handcuffed. His hands were behind his back. He was seated in the back of a patrol car at the time of the search.
In Dickin, we wrote that the handcuffed person could conceivably still reach a bag that was some distance away, and the We suppressed the evidence there, and the Supreme Court said we got it wrong. It affirmed our decision on the basis this was an item associated with the person and therefore was subject to the search incident to arrest, but specifically rejected the idea that the handcuffs played a role in the decision.
I think the handcuffs alone don't play a role, but if you look at all of the circumstances surrounding Mr. Van Ness's arrest, he was in the back of the patrol car when the container was pried open. He didn't resist arrest. To access his locked container, he would have had to overcome 3 to 4 officers. He would have had to gain access to his backpack. He would have had to open his backpack. He would have had to enter the combination to the locked box and gain access. It's just not realistic. He had no realistic possibility of gaining access.
How big was the box?
It was 6 inches by 4 inches by 2 inches, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. John Jewell for the State of Washington. What defense fails to notice is the two different analyses for search incident to arrest that the court in Byrd gave. The first is the search of a person. The court said that the search of a person is unencumbered by the reasonable...
What does Riley versus California do to that?
I'm sorry?
What does Riley versus California, the U.S. Supreme Court cell phone case, do to that?
I don't think it affects it at all. Cell phones, as the court pointed out, there are a very different item. We used to carry notebooks that we'd write down phone numbers in and stuff like that. Now a cell phone has access to literally millions of pages of documents. So if you're searching the cell phone, you're searching vastly more than what the person carries in their pocket. And they're saying if you're going to do that kind of a search, you have to have particular information why you want to go after that stuff.
Well, haven't we recognized in the past some elevated privacy expectation when someone puts a lock on a box?
There is the privacy. Those cases come out of the car search cases where they're saying when, and is the second analysis of a search incident to arrest, the area within the person's grasp. And they're saying when you're searching that area, if it's locked, there's no right to search.
Let me tell you my concern. Robinson starts with this sweeping statement that I think can fairly be read to say, if it's on the person, you can search it. We don't care about anything else. And then Riley comes along and says, we know that's what it says, but this category of property is different. We've always treated locked boxes as different than other kinds of boxes as well. Is that the next logical progression of the application of Riley? There's another category of property that has an elevated expectation of privacy.
And yes, there is in the cell phone because of the vast amount of data that can be stored.
Well, but in Stroud, the court talked about a elevated right to privacy in the locked box. And how do you reconcile Stroud with Byrd? Byrd didn't overrule Stroud. Byrd didn't mention Stroud. So what's your position as to how we reconcile those two cases?
Reconcile, as I was pointing out earlier, that Stroud is a search of the wingspan area or the reach area of the suspect when they're arrested. That if you're going to search that area, then lock boxes and the reasonableness of the search, the safety of the officer, the connection of the evidence looked for to the crime. When you're searching the person, as the court pointed out, the power to arrest is the power to disarm the person. You're taking the person into custody. They have to make sure that they're disarmed, that they're safe. And they have authority then to search the person and any property in there connected to the person. In this case, the defendant was wearing the backpack when he was arrested. It was only removed from him so they could handcuff him. They went put on handcuffs and then try to remove a backpack later. He was still present at the location when the backpack
was searched. So at that point, he was already disarmed.
The backpack was removed from him, and then
he was disarmed.
The weapons that were in the backpack were removed from him. The court has always given a distinction with, or given the officers the discretion to remove something, to put on handcuffs, and to physically detain the person. They don't have to leave the person free to fight them and manipulate stuff while they.
How would effective law enforcement be hindered by requiring, once the backpack's on the sidewalk and the lockbox is discovered,
requiring a warrant before the lockbox is opened.
They wouldn't be terribly hindered by that. They could get a search warrant for it. It would hinder them, or it would present the potential danger of the person getting access to it. In this case, there was testimony about handcuffed people, slipping handcuffs, you know, getting out, getting into stuff. So the officers now have to not only detain the person and secure the location, they have to have somebody watch the defendant to make sure he's not gaining access to the item that they take.
I don't recall reading any testimony at the suppression hearing about officers' concern about Mr. Van Ness gaining access to the backpack once he was placed in the handcuffs.
There wasn't testimony about him specifically, but the officer testified that he has had incidents where people have slipped handcuffs or gotten handcuffs back in front of them, and there was concern when an officer, just because a person was handcuffed, that they couldn't get access to something. And the idea with lock boxes, there are lock boxes now specifically for weapons that you can open by pressing your hand on it. It reads your fingerprints or you hit a quick code. So the fact that something's locked does not mean it's not accessible.
Wait, is there any evidence that this was that type of lock box?
This was a very flimsy box. In fact, the officer was able to pry the corner up.
And so it was not one that was fingerprint.
It was not a fingerprint access lock. But again, with a
combination lock on it.
It had a combination lock.
Visible to anyone looking at it.
I assume so. But yeah, I mean, if something's locked, I remember I had a lock that you could give a little twist and it would pop open. It'd be no more of a lock than a paper clip.
Well, what evidence do we have, not your experience, but what evidence do we have about this particular lock box other than it was, they were able to pry it open with a screwdriver?
In fact, it was easily pried open. The officer testified that just a few days or weeks prior to this, he had served a search warrant and recovered a lockbox very similar to this one that did contain a weapon in it. So he had specific information or knowledge that a box of this size and shape could contain a weapon.
Strikes me as peculiar if he was concerned about a loaded weapon or an explosive in the box that he would be prying it open with a screwdriver. I mean, those two ideas seem to be in conflict with each other if officer safety is the concern.
Well, prying it open with a screwdriver would be just getting the corner up. That's what he did, pry it open about a half inch.
Well, but if there was a bomb in there, that would be enough to...
It could be if it was triggered by moving the box.
Yes.
Any moving of the box could trigger that, too. You know, if you picked it up to carry it, it could set off if it was a motion activated. He was also concerned that he was aware that weapons can be modified so that they're very dangerous, you know, the trigger guard taken off. And so he wanted to make sure if there was a weapon in there that it wasn't in a situation that rattling this thing box around could fire the weapon. He was also had concern for the potential of the explosive device. Again, just weeks prior to this, an officer not following the department's protocol had taken a backpack into the evidence room.
But that explosive device, the pipe bomb, was not in a locked container.
No, it was in
a
backpack.
It was in the backpack.
Right, it was in the backpack. And then,
so that was the a different issue related to the inventory policy.
There, he hadn't searched the backpack at all. Here, when he searched the backpack, he found a box that he didn't know what was in it. And he wanted to determine, is this containing something dangerous, or is this just, you know, carrying stuff in it?
Did the officer have enough facts to support probable cause to get a warrant to open the box?
At the time he tried it open? I don't think so. All he had was a locked box, and he was proceeding under an inventory for safety.
But if it's locked and remains locked, you certainly didn't need the inventory of the contents to preserve the contents or protect against destruction. And if there was safety, I want to reemphasize what Judge Schindler said. You know, if he anticipates there's a bomb or a gun that might discharge accidentally, prying it open with a screwdriver seems to totally belie any credibility of that argument.
Not necessarily. I mean, his other option is to leave the backpack sitting there, have the bomb squad come out and secure the item, and then blow it up under a secure situation so that they can disarm anything in there. Because that's what they do when there's a bomb. They don't open a bomb. They discharge it.
That's my point.
Yeah. And he wasn't at that level of saying, I'm convinced there's a bomb in this backpack. He was at the level that the policy was, we search for explosive items or incendiary items before we bring them into the property room. Oh, the defense had said in their brief that, the officer didn't finish the inventory search of the backpack. And the, officer's testimony was he did. Page 15 at the suppression hearing, he said, I ensured there were no other dangerous items in the backpack and then put it in the trunk. So he had finished the search of it. He had found four knives in the backpack, three of them dangerous weapons under the city ordinance. And based on that, he had reason to fear for safety of, the officers or other people when the item was returned to the defendant, and he conducted an inventory search. State would ask you to affirm under both the search incident to arrest and the inventory search. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.